When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Listening to All the Books, a weekly show of recommendations and enthusiasm regarding the week's new book releases. This is episode 453, and today we are talking about books being released on March 12th, 2024, and more. I'm Liberty Hardy, here with Vanessa Diaz, and we're coming to you from BookRiot.com. Vanessa, hello!
Liberty! We're here.
Oh, we're here. Yes.
Life is lifing.
I don't think I've ever recorded a show this late before, but there was lots of lifing going on.
Extenuating circumstances.
Several days. So, yeah. Basically, it's like baking an episode and eating it right away almost.
Because yes, we're a little behind schedule, but it's all going to be fine. There may be some yawning, possibly some background noise.
Yeah,
but
we haven't been to bed. The wind is trying to take the roof off my house. The cats are furiously banging on the door because they want to come in. They probably have, you know, thoughts about, I'm just kidding. They don't have any thoughts. I'm pretty sure their heads
inside
are empty.
A cat's head, and specifically your cat's heads, would be quite the thing.
Yeah, I imagine inside their heads is just like, food, be bad. Sleep, food, let's be bad. Sleep, food, let's be bad. Yep, all the time. That's basically what it is.
But you love them, and they're cute.
Yeah, they are cute. I have cameras set up in the house now because they have to be watched. And it's fun to watch them, you know. I'm not too concerned about violating their privacy because they're cats, you know.
I think I co-sign that, yeah.
Yeah, so sometimes it's fun to watch them, like, move around when they don't have anyone else in the room with them. Yep. And they don't know that it's happening. And then it's funny to watch them, like, on the camera and you call them and they turn and look towards the sound of your voice. And
what
then
is this omniscient
choose
voice?
To ignore you. Oh. And you're like, hey,
even better.
I can see you. I know you're ignoring me. It's funny.
I have a friend who does that from, like, our workspace, like from the office, somebody here on staff who will, like, basically talk to her dog when he's being bad, like, stop barking. And the dog always looks like, where did that voice come from? And it makes me laugh every single time.
Yeah. Yeah. I have the option to set up the phone or the voice and the microphone and all that stuff. But I don't know.
You're like, nah,
I have such a small house, they can just hear me, like, yelling at them anyway. So
you're good.
Yeah. So that's going on. This week, for like the third week in a row, the corresponding area code is just general purpose. Like, it's area code 453, and the last two were general purpose as well. So I'm going to assign this one to Fraggle Rock, I think.
I think that's a good choice.
So, yeah, if you need to call Fraggle Rock.
Now you know. Sort of.
You know, talk to a doozer.
Oh, man, now I want to watch Fraggle Rock.
Do you know,
I've watched it in a long time.
So I got this amazing book about Fraggle Rock several months ago. This giant, like, art picture book of, like, all, like, making the puppets and, like, doing all the stuff. And so then I saw that it was streaming on Max, possibly. And I started to watch it. And it was freaky.
Yeah, I bet.
It was freaking me out. I was like, I have to stop this. I'm not ready for this right now. Like, I don't know what it was about it, but I mean, I loved Fraggle Rock when I was a kid. You know, we had a guinea pig named, you know, Boober, and, like, you know, just like, but this time I was like, this is too weird for me.
Like, there's a lot of bopping around and colors and singing.
Yeah.
And
it was very strange. Very strange.
I'll report back.
Yeah.
When I begin to watch.
Yeah.
That's life with Liberty and Vanessa.
Yeah. But I mean, I fondly remember watching it. And it was like around the time that I was also watching Punky Brewster. So I was confusing, like, the two old men with white hair and glasses
cute.
And dogs, you know, like there were
that's
dogs.
That's amazing. But, funny story. My dad calls me Sparky. and he calls me Sparky because he was trying to call me Punky because, you know, young, dark haired, freckle, whatever. But my dad like is terrible with association. Like he always is off by just like a few letters. He's like, hey, you look like Sparky. And I was like, it's Sparky, like my dog. And he's like, you know, the girl that I'm like Punky Bruce. So anyway, my dad calls me Sparky, but he's trying to call me Punky. So that's
that happens. It's still cute. I mean,
it is. You know, I love it. It's weird, yeah. But I love it.
Well, before we talk more about Punky Brewster, we are going to hear from our first sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publisher of the smash hit Fourth Wing. You'll only cross these blades once in a page-turning new tale of revenge, strategy, and so many lies. Best-selling Red Tower Books is releasing its next irresistible read that will capture your imagination and keep you guessing until the end. Mae Corlin's Five Broken Blades tells an intricate high-stakes tale of five total strangers united in a plot that will test their strength, wits, and courage. Each has their reasons, all have secrets. But while it's easy to portray a stranger, it's not so simple to stab a friend or a lover, okay, in the back. Now these five blades must choose between vengeance and one another. Pick up Five Broken Blades by Mae Corlin for a thrilling, adventurous tale filled with risk, romance, adventure, and oh, so many lies. The relationships in it are complex and nuanced and involve everything from friends to enemies, found and biological family and lovers and more. Thanks again to Entangled Publishing's Red Tower Books, publishers of the smash hit Fourth Wing, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang. So this is an interesting love story. It's great for fans of Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow and High Fidelity. It's set in the mid-90s at NYU. And it follows young Wang, who has gotten the advice of love through Chinese numerology from his uncle. So he believes that he will have seven great loves in his life. And then he meets Irena in 95. And she's like the best. She's brilliant, charismatic, quick-witted, funny. They fall in love. But the thing is, she's number six. So if he is to have seven great loves, does that mean his time with Irena is going to come to an end? So this is a love letter to Western pop culture, Eastern traditions, and being a first-generation New Yorker. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang, for sponsoring this episode.
Okay. So I don't want you to get too excited, but there is a signed photo of Soleil Moonfry sitting about 20 feet from where I am right now.
Oh my gosh, that's adorable. Yeah. I love her. And I love that name.
I wrote to her when I was 8.
Oh my God, I wrote to her when I was like, I forget how old.
Well, you must have been like,
I was
one.
It was much, yeah, I was going to say it was like past the prime of the show.
It would be funnier if I said, like, I wrote to her last year when Punky Brewster, like, did the reboot. But I didn't know. I wrote to her when I was, like, 8 because I got her address. They had a bunch of addresses for famous stars in Sticker Magazine, which was a thing you got at Toys R Us, which, like, was basically just Lisa Frank stuff. Like, and then a couple things. And they sent me a signed black and white headshot, which probably wasn't signed by her, you know. But, like, probably hey, not, but I was pretty excited.
What do we know?
Yeah. I was very excited. I was very excited because I also wrote to Weird Al that month. And I got a letter back that said, to correspond with Weird Al, you had to pay money to be in his fan club.
Oh, and that's nice.
I was disappointed because I didn't have any money. So
I had a friend who sent Dave Coulier of Full House fame, like from one of those like same like, well, they, you know, you get, they had everybody's addresses in those books. Mm-hmm. She sent him a piece of lettuce because she was like, this will get his attention. Who sends lettuce? And he indeed, or, you know, somebody wrote back like, wow, no one's ever sent me lettuce.
How did he even stay fresh in the mail?
Correct. Gross. I don't know. I don't know. She put it in like a Ziploc bag. She was very proud of this. It was like one of those like icebreaker things in college. And that was like the first thing she'd led with. Hey, Sarah, wherever you are.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've done a couple of author interviews where they've talked about like weird things that they've received in the mail. Chuck Palahniuk talks about it like all the time. Yep. He sends weird things in the mail. But anyway,
Now, enough of that.
I brought it back to authors. Now we're going to talk about books. How about you tell us about the book club?
Yes. So this one is actually near and dear to my heart because I used to write this newsletter that I'm going to tell you about. So if you want to make your book club the best book club, sign up for our In the Club newsletter. In the Club delivers recommendations for the best books to discuss in your book clubs, from buzzy new releases to brilliant throwbacks. The books highlighted in the newsletter will help to drive your book club discussions. We'll also share some book club friendly recipes and interesting bookish updates from all over. So if you want to become a paid subscriber, you get even more recommendations plus community features. So in other words, we'll keep you well met, well read, and well fed. Visit bookriot.com/in the club to sign up. That's bookriot.com/in the club.
All right. So I think I wrote like 100,000 words about my first two books. So I'm going to try and scale it down, but I might not be able to. We're going to find out.
That's okay.
My first pick for today is Headshot by Rita Bullwinkle. I'm a fan of Bullwinkle's story collection, Belly Up, which came out a few years ago. This is her debut novel. It is a taut 224 pages that you are probably already hearing about everywhere. This novel is about eight teenage girls fighting in the Daughters of America Cup Boxing Championship in Reno, Nevada. These girls have all come to the gym from various places around the country. It's a crappy gym with very few spectators. There are four pairs of matches, like each of the girls are going to fight, and then the winners of those fight, so two more matches, and then the winners of those two matches fight, and then someone is the champion. In each fight, there are eight rounds of 2 minutes. There are judges, they declare points for the fighters, like if you get a good hit here, you do this, and then they declare a winner for each round, like, you know, if you win five out of, you know, whatever, or the girl gives up, or you know, and sometimes there's even a tie, and then they have to fight another round. But basically, the whole book is the inner thoughts of each of the girls as they're fighting and getting ready to fight. Their motivations for boxing, for staying in the round. Like I said, they're from all over. One girl is fighting and thinking about how a child drowned while she was working as a lifeguard at a pool that summer. And she's also thinking about another loss in her life. One thinks that fully embracing weirdness and being wild helps her win, like helps her get through life. Like if you just, she wears a raccoon skin cap outside the ring all the time and howls and barks at her opponents to intimidate them. And also just basically people in general, she thinks like that's how she's going to get through life, by, you know, frightening others. One of the girls wants to be the best at everything she can conquer. So somehow that leads her to boxing, and she wants to win this boxing championship. One fight at the beginning is a set of cousins who are a few years apart. And the younger cousin wants to show the older cousin that she can be the champion. And the older cousin resents the younger one because in their town, when the younger one decided that she wanted to box like her older cousin, the owner of the gym where they fought only ever let them fight each other after that, instead of letting them fight other boxers who were all boys, you know. So like she's only ever used to fighting her cousin and getting used to her cousin's style of fighting now. It has this unique narrative style that uses each of their names multiple times on the page, and almost always their first and last name. So it kind of feels like you're listening to a sporting event being called, almost, like, because this is a sporting event, but it's like, you know, this fighter does this and this fighter, you know, like when they call games. And I have to admit, I found it a little jarring at first. I was like, this is a lot of name, like on the page. But then it like settled into a rhythm, and it even helps keep them separate because some of them have like the same letters in their name, like the first letters. So it helped keep them separate. Like, and this morning, as I was writing these notes, I realized, like, I didn't notice this at the time, but I don't think anyone else mentioned in the book, not the parents, not the friends, not the coaches, not their lovers, not anyone else mentioned, is mentioned by name. They're just like, they're coach, they're judge, they're this. These girls are the center of the book. And it weaves in and out of the bouts while also showing not just the girls' thoughts on the present and the past, but Bullwinkle does this thing that I love, where she'll be talking about something the girl wants, like something the girl is thinking about, like someday I'm going to do this, you know, or like if I do this, if I win this, I'm going to go here. And then it'll say like, but she'll end up not talking to this person much again when she moves to Chicago after high school. It's just like these little flashes of like who they become and what their future is like, just thrown in here and there. I also love that it doesn't really dwell in physical pain. Like, we know that getting hit in the ribs and the face and the chest, you know, hurts, you know, and she talks about like the girls will get a bruise or they get hit in the eye and it swells up, but it doesn't go on and on. Like, the girls are not like, oh, I'm in so much pain. I need to make this stop and I hope this ends soon and I can't take much. Like, there's no whining. There's no thinking about it. It's just like a fact, like, you know, boxers probably think this anyway, because like you've signed up to allow someone to punch you in the face. Mm-hmm. So you know that like this is coming. But I mean, these girls are already in pain. You know, life is pain, Highness. Their lives are filled with brutalities and pain and fear and anger already. And we know that girls can be violent and fierce and tough, just like boys, you know, like we're taught. You know, the girls are quiet and sensitive and delicate, but, you know, we know that's not true. And like boxing, their lives are ugly and exhausting, and sometimes they want to quit in the middle. It's really amazing. I predict National Book Award nominee, Pen Faulkner nominee, Center for Fiction First Novel Award nominee. It's just going to get nominated for all the awards. As an aside, mostly because I just love telling this story, Catherine Dunn, who is the author of Geek Love, she was a huge fan of boxing. Like, Rita Bullwinkle is a fan of boxing. She writes about boxing. Catherine Dunn did as well. And she actually wrote a book called One Ring Circus, Dispatches from the World of Boxing, which is like 30 years of coverage of boxing. And she wasn't just a fan, but she also went to the gym and boxed regularly. And a few years before her death, when she was in her 60s, she was walking across a parking lot to her car after leaving a store, and a woman ran up and grabbed her pocketbook, thinking like, hey, this is going to be an easy steal from this old lady, and Dunn punched her until she let go.
And she, I love that so much.
Yeah, I just think that's so funny. It's so great. But anyway, I digress. This book has content warnings, including child death on the page. As I mentioned earlier, you know, the girl loses a child while she's a lifeguard. There's also mention of a baby dying, loss of a loved one, gore, grief, violence, and injury, physical abuse, sexism, ableism, and passing mention of animal deaths. It is Headshot by Rita Bullwinkle.
We have a lot of accidental themes in a book that is ultimately extremely not in any way about the same topic. And I'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
My first pick is The Tower by Flora Carr. It actually came out last week, but once I realized that it was about, I was like, oh yeah, like gonna need to read that because it's about Mary, Queen of Scots. So the book takes place specifically during Mary's year-ish stay at Lochleven Castle. And really by stay, I mean imprisonment. So I do need to give you a short history lesson to explain how we arrived here. And you're going to be like, why are you telling me this? But literally it's the setup for the book. I'm not just waxing for no reason. I'm also going to give trigger warnings here for discussions of sexual assault and some violence. So Mary, Queen of Scots, Mary Stuart, was Queen of Scotland from 1542 to 1560 something, 67, I think, famously lost her head after being convicted of plotting to kill England's Queen Elizabeth, her cousin. Not everybody realizes in like my popular conversations that that's what the deal was, is they were cousins. She was the granddaughter of Henry VIII's sister Margaret, so technically she would have been next in line to the throne if Elizabeth didn't have an heir, which she famously didn't because of that Tudor connection, and that was a problem. More on that later. She became queen when she was just a baby, as so often happened in history. Babies were king and queen all the time. And I do mean baby, like 6 days old baby. When her father, James V of Scotland, died, her mother, Mary of Guise, like ruled in her stead until she came of age. And in the meantime, they sent Mary off to France to live under the protection of Henry II and Catherine de' Medici at court, And then she eventually married their son, the Dauphin, Francis. But they were both so young. Like, he was even younger than her when they married. I think they were married for all of a year and never produced an heir, possibly because they never consummated the marriage. We're not sure. Either way, Francis tragically dies of an ear infection early on into that marriage, and Mary has to return to Scotland to now rule. And her mother has done her best, but has not been able to staunch the rise of Protestantism in what was once, you know, a Catholic country. And then I will speed up this next part, but basically from the moment she arrives in Scotland, it's problems all the way down. Like, the book does a really good job of explaining a lot of this history in flashbacks. But the short version is that she's this, you know, like, tall, graceful beauty. She's very sensual. She's like cultured. She's been in France, and she's also very Catholic. So everyone is like, oh, that papist witch, leveling every misogynistic critique at her that has ever been said about a woman. And because she's been sheltered at French court all this time, she's not exactly equipped to deal with everything that happens. She marries the wrong guy, her cousin, who apparently it was like a lust match, and he was just terrible. Everybody hates her for it. And then she does have a son with him, but he is not long for this earth, because through less than natural causes, he also dies. And not 3 months after his death, she's married this third husband named Lord Bothwell. All that is important because her detractors claim that they were having an affair, and that that's, you know, so then of course her marrying this guy and killing the other one was like all her plot. Could it have been? Maybe. Most historians don't think that's the case. What is more likely to have happened is that this man Bothwell, who was part of her detractors specifically, like, took advantage, like, he assaulted her, he raped her in order to force her into marrying him and keep him her under his thumb, because otherwise she would have been a ruined woman. And this book then imagines what happened after that in these 11 months where she is imprisoned at this castle. Her son has been ripped from her. Her only companions are these two quote-unquote lowly chambermaids. And then eventually one of the women who was part of her, like, ladies-in-waiting, the jeweled ladies as they call them, like, does join. Funny story, all her ladies-in-waiting were named Mary. So it was Mary and four Marys. It was five Marys. But anyway. And so this book does this really fantastic thing with the story, and that, like, again, we know all this information, a lot of it is being relayed, there's a lot of detail that I'm leaving out that is really expertly woven in a way that doesn't feel too expository, but it's a focus on each of those four ladies, and you get to hear, like, their inner workings of their minds, and kind of like Liberty was saying with the book she just discussed, that it is like just a kind of a dive into them. Like, life is pain and there's so much terrible stuff going around them. And you get to hear these bits of, like, this is the thing that this person dreams of happening, but then you get to know, but ultimately that never happened because, or, like, ultimately this happened when. Like, it does these kind of flash forwards, both to things that you already know are going to happen if you're paid attention to history, and not because of, you know, the lives of these other three women are very much being imagined. There is a queer element. It's just such a beautiful focus on, like, the friendships, the intimacies, the jealousies, like, all the little kind of day-to-day things that happen in what is ultimately this, like, awful situation where Mary is ultimately trying to plot to escape, and what it's like when they've all kind of been flattened into being in the same role, except that, like, technically one of these women is a queen, but she's queen really in name only, but there's still that respect, and they're still doing all the stuff like dressing her, you know, and doing, like, the chambermaid stuff, even though, like, this person is very much, like, imprisoned and, like, will eventually be executed. You don't think you're going to get this rich, beautiful novel out of this because, again, you kind of know where the story is headed, but it's so layered and complex, and you, like, attach yourself to each of these four characters, not just the queen. It's such a stunning debut. I really loved it. And I know I've been talking a long time, but it's because it's such a great book. I loved it all the way. That is The Tower by Flora Carr.
Okay, so my book was called Headshot, and yours should have been called Head Not.
Yeah.
Sorry. Indeed.
Never change.
Wow. We did talk for a long time about both of our first books, so we're going to have to speed through the next ones. But that's okay. My first one, or second one, I guess I should say, is Victim by Andrew Borrega. This I started reading last night, and I'm about a third of the way through it, and it's really good. I thought last night I would have some extra time to, like, maybe fit in some more books because we had to delay our recording, but no, but I did get through a third of it, and it's so good, so I wanted to put it on your radars. It is a cutting satire along the lines of Black Buck and Yellowface. It's about virtue signaling and racism and diversity initiatives. The narrator is Javier Perez. He's a young man from the Bronx. And in the beginning, he's telling readers how he ended up doing what he did. But of course, we don't know what it is that he did yet. He's just like saying, like, if I like had done this, or this is how I ended up doing, you know, this, I'm going to explain to you what I did, but we don't know what it is. And then it goes back to talk about when he was younger and first discovered that he could be a victim. He grew up poor in a pretty unsafe neighborhood. His parents moved to New York from Puerto Rico. His mother was a teenager when she had him. His father was a drug dealer. And not like in a hiding it kind of way. Like, he was very proud of being a drug dealer, kept tons of cash around the house. He was also a sexist bully who thought Javier was too soft and would slap him around. And in middle school, his parents split up. Like, they had split up like a million times, it seemed to him. And they finally split up for the last time, and his father moves back to Puerto Rico. And while Javier is visiting him, his father is murdered in front of him over a drug deal. And when Javier returns home, he finds that people treat him differently. The school treats him differently. The teachers are nicer. They're giving him less work. They're like, how are you doing all the time? The principal tells him that he has permission to leave class whenever he wants and hang out in the nurse's office if he feels overwhelmed or he's sad. He doesn't even need to ask. The teachers will understand. He can just get up and leave. And Javier's mother is like, no, he won't be doing that. She is a proud woman, and she works very hard to keep a roof over their heads and feed him, and she just wants him to get a great education and go to college. But Javier sees this as a way to use his father's death to his advantage, so he starts leaving class all the time, especially in the middle of, like, his least favorite subjects. He also has a best friend named Gio. Gio lives in his building. They have known each other since they were tiny, tiny babies. Gio's father was absent from his life, and his mother died a few years ago, and now he's being raised by his grandmother. And Javier doesn't understand why Gio doesn't use his mother's death to get things, but he doesn't. And he also doesn't understand why Gio has started hanging around with the local drug dealer and his crew. And then when they are older and they're seniors, Javier is on the path to college while Gio has dropped out of school and now sells drugs for said drug dealer. Javier has seen what that life did to his dad. He doesn't want a part of that. So they're not as close as they used to be. Javier wants to be a writer, and he's planning on going to a local college. Then he meets a guidance counselor who tells him that he could go to a fancy college a few hours away that would impress everyone when he said the name of it, and all for free because he's the right kind of student they are looking for. Wink, wink. The counselor tells him he just has to write an essay about the hardships in his life. And Javier is like, do you mean write about being poor and brown and having a father who was a murdered drug dealer and a best friend who was a drug dealer? If I do that, they'll pay for everything. And the counselor is like, whoa, those are your words, not mine. But yes, you should write down everything you just said just like that. His mother is angry. He doesn't want him to do it. You know, she's like, you've had an amazing life. What are you talking about? You know, you have food and clothes and shelter and school and people who love you. But he does it anyway. He writes this essay, kind of embellishing a little bit, and he's accepted and he gets a full scholarship to go to this very elite college, very white college. And when he first gets there, he discovers that though he wrote about his life to get into the school, telling his life story to the other students around him, which he begins to embellish a bit more, doesn't get him the acceptance from the classmates that he expects. And then he meets a group of other students who experience racism and condescension and tokenism at the college. And they start talking about that. And that is where I left off. But I think things are going to get out of hand. It's funny and heart squeezing, and it's making great points. I'm really looking forward to finishing it. I do want to give content warnings, including classism, racism, sexism, violence, murder, death of a parent, animal death, his father makes him kill their dinner, child abuse and parental bullying, and alcohol and drug use and suicide. It is Victim by Andrew Borrega.
I cannot wait to talk about this next pick, but I swear I'm going to try not to be as verbose as I was the first time. That pick is Blessed Water by Margaret Duwaihi. This is the sequel to a book that somehow completely passed me by when it first came out. It's called Scorched Grace. It's the first in the Sister Holiday series, which was the first book to be published under Gillian Flynn's imprint, Zando Books. And it's one that I came across because I work, or like, yeah, the office that I sit in is also where we do TBR, which is, you know, our recommendation service. And I kept seeing this book being recommended and then purchased. And I was like, wait, what is, there's a smoking nun on the cover. I need to know more. And then, of course, a bunch of book riot people started talking about it. So it is about this tattooed, bleach-haired, chain-smoking, gold-toothed lesbian nun solving crime, basically. And I could stop there because that's all it really took to hook me. But in the first book, we get to know Sister Holiday in Scorched Grace and how she came to be a nun, how she joined this particular order, the Sisters of the Sublime Blood, if I could say that correctly. Specifically, her difficult childhood in New York as one of two queer kids raised by unaccepting parents, one of whom is a cop. The bulk of the story takes place, though, at this school, St. Sebastian's School, where a series of arsons have left multiple people dead, thrusting their surrounding New Orleans community into chaos. Sister Holiday has always had this sort of knack for sleuthing that she puts into practice now, letting us in on her messy and often very tragic past kind of along the way. So it does like flashbacks to current and then back and forth. So in Blessed Water, this sequel, Sister Holiday is committed to taking her permanent vows, because there is a whole process when you do the nun thing with the Sisters of the Sublime Blood. And now she has a newly minted PI certificate in hand. So she's like official in that game. And so she's joining the fire inspector that we met in the first book, Magnolia Ravot, in her latest venture to form something called Redemption Detective Agency. They try to start out by busting a philandering husband, but along the way they find the body of a priest floating in the river. Again, I have not finished this because I actually rushed to read the first book because I hadn't read it yet, but it had been on my mind for a long time. Got partially through the second, but I knew I needed to read it when the author described it as a ticking clock mystery told in three suspenseful acts that take place across Good Friday, Saturday, and Easter Sunday. I was raised Catholic, don't generally identify with most of it, which is why this book is, it's really interesting because clearly she is not like what you would think of as a prototypical Catholic nun, from her queerness to just like everything about her lifestyle. She definitely slips up, she curses, but she's, I don't know, like, I feel like I'm kind of watching the nun from Dairy Girls and then some, with a little bit of Mrs. Davis, you know, the TV show from Peacock. It's just a really layered story of like why people turn to faith and then interrogating that faith, and then also just this really juicy mystery on the side. So there's just a whole lot to interrogate here about like mysticism and truth. The audiobooks are performed by Mara Wilson, which is really fun, and I just cannot wait to see what else comes of this series. Trigger warnings for homophobia, sexual assault, which is mostly off the page but did kind of happen suddenly, and I was like, oh wow. It's more of a discussion of things in the past, and also death of a parent. So again, so fun. First, this is the second in the series. Hopefully more to come. Again, that is Blessed Water by Margot Duwaihi.
All right. So those are books that we have read, we're mostly read, excited about. And now we are going to quickly talk about a few books that are out today that we are excited to read. My first is Mother Doll by Katya Apakina. This is the same author as The Deeper the Water, The Uglier the Fish, which is an amazing novel, was nominated for like a million things. It was very good. This one is about a young Russian woman in California named Xenia, who is pregnant, but she's having a hard time because her husband doesn't want a baby. She's also upset about the fact that her beloved grandmother is dying and she's all the way across the country and she can't see her. And then Xenia receives a call from a psychic, claiming to have a message from her Russian great-grandmother. The psychic's saying that mostly they specialize in talking to pets, but this Russian woman reached out to them and said they needed to talk to Xenia. So he's calling her. And through the psychic, her dead great-grandmother wants to tell Xenia the story of her ancestors, and she also needs Xenia's forgiveness for something. As Xenia listens to her supposed family history, she begins to reflect on what it means for her life and the choices that she's made. It has all the starred reviews. It sounds amazing. I'm also very excited to find out if the psychic is the real deal. You know, like, is this guy, like, lying to her? Probably not, if he has some information, but I don't know. It's going to be fun to find out. It is called Mother Doll by Katya Apakina. And now we are going to hear from another sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Bloom Books. Taming Seven is an epic and unforgettable love story in the international best-selling and TikTok phenomenon The Boys of Tommen series from Chloe Walsh. So Tommen's cheekiest lad, Jared Gibbsy Gibson, has always been a comedian, but inside he is haunted by events of the past and he uses humor to cope, hiding his true self from the world. Then you have Claire Biggs, who is the epitome of sunshine. She's always loved Gibbsy, her brother's friend and her favorite neighbor. She also has always seen a side to him that no one else seems to notice, and she becomes determined to tame her wild at heart childhood best friend. So the Boys of Tommen series is an internationally best-selling YA romance series that has taken TikTok by storm. It's perfect for readers looking for new adult slash crossover romance, dual point of views, friends to lovers, marathon-worthy TikTok books, and angsty tearjerkers. Taming Seven is published today, and it's the fifth book in the series, so make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Bloom Books for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo. This is one I'm actually super excited about. I liked Leigh Bardugo's other adult fantasy books, and so I'm really looking forward to this one. It's set in the Spanish Golden Age during a time of high stakes political intrigue and glittering wealth. It follows Luzia, a servant in the household of an impoverished Spanish nobleman who reveals a talent for little miracles. Her social climbing mistress demands Luzia use her gifts to win over Madrid's most powerful players, but what begins as simple amusement takes a dangerous turn. Luzia will need to use every bit of her wit and will to survive, even the help of Guillén Santángel, an immortal familiar whose own secrets could prove deadly for them both. So The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo is on sale now. And like I said, it's a must read of the season. It's perfect for anyone who loves history, a little bit of magic, a lot of danger. You can get your copy now at LeighBardugoTheFamiliar.com. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo, for sponsoring this episode.
Okay. Vanessa, what is your next pick?
My next pick is Pride and Joy by Louisa Onome. This book is being pitched as Black Cake meets Death at a Funeral, which I was like, okay, great. So it's equal parts kind of heartwarming, hilarious. It's about three generations of a Nigerian-Canadian family dealing with the death of the family matriarch, with this interesting kind of twist, which is the main character, Joy, is a recently divorced life coach who is planning her mom's 70th birthday weekend, like a dutiful Nigerian daughter. She's got all the planning done. She's done it all herself. The family begins to arrive. Mama Mary, as she's called, it goes to take a nap. And then when the grandkids go to wake her to like start the festivities, they find that she isn't so much asleep as, well, dead. And you might think that would put a damper on the celebratory vibes, but refusing to believe that her sister is actually gone, Auntie Nancy decides or declares that she's had this premonition that Mama Mary is going to rise again on the third day like Jesus Christ on Easter. Just you wait. So then this sort of family party turns into something bigger that really ropes in like the entire Nigerian Canadian community around them. And they're all spreading the word that like, nope, she's really coming back. I promise she's coming back. And of course, Joy is a little skeptical, and it's kind of not being a, she's like not allowed to mourn essentially because she's so swept up in everything happening. And I love stories like this that take like a difficult topic and then put in all the family dynamics. So I'm really excited to see how this goes because it is very much pitched as ultimately being very heartwarming and funny. So yeah, this sounds like a book right up my alley. It's Pride and Joy by Louisa Onome.
Okay, and my other pick for today is The Siege of Burning Grass by Primi Mohammed. We talked about a couple of Mohammed's books recently. Patricia talked about the novella The Butcher of the Forest, and I talked about the novella And What Can We Offer You Tonight on Backlist. Mohammed is quickly becoming one of my autobi authors. This one, though, is a big novel. It's over 400 pages. It's a work of dystopian fiction about two empires, the Varkal and the Medaris, who are in a never-ending war. The leader of the Varkal pacifist movement has been imprisoned and tortured by his government, and he is given an offer. If he spies on the Medaris side and infiltrates their pacifist movement and convinces them to rise up against their government, he'll be set free. But it's a tough decision. Does he go against what he believes in? helped people who have harmed him and provoke war when he's worked against it? We're going to find out. It sounds amazing. It is The Siege of Burning Grass by Primi Muhammad.
Speaking of autobi authors, my last pick is from one for me, and that is Parasol Against the Axe by Helen Oyoyemi. Look, I love me some Helen Oyoyemi. I've talked about Gingerbread and Pieces on the show. White is for Witching has been on my TBR for years. I swear I will read it someday. I already own, I think, every book she's written, even if I haven't read them all. And I just know that when I embark on an Oyoyemi read, that it's going to be a ride. It'll probably be bananas. I'll probably be lost. I'm a little bit confused for part of it. Maybe even feel less smart for a while. And then it kind of all comes together and I'm like, wow. And that definitely seems to be what's going on here. I did start this one on audio, but found that I'm going to need to, I think, do this one in print to really pick up everything that she's putting down. Now, in this book, the Czech capital of Prague is a living thing. And so for reasons, the one of the main characters anyway of the story named Hero, who is a writer using the pen name Dorothea Gilman, has accepted this invitation that like she was kind of expected to decline, which is to go on a bachelorette weekend with essentially frenemies to Prague. But she goes and she doesn't know that she's arrived in a city with a penchant for playing tricks. And the crux kind of here is that there's this book that Hero has brought along called Paradoxical Undressing, that the text of it changes depending on when it's being read and also who's doing the reading. And like from what I can tell, like it does truly go all over the place. There's stories of like the court of King Rudolf and a love triangle, a judge trying to frame his own son for crimes against the Communist Party. And again, it changes with every person who reads it, but also when you yourself are reading it. So you yourself don't get the same stories. There's a real Dorothea Gilman in the story who apparently has an axe to grind with Hero because like, why are you using my real name as your pen name? And then all this with this city that is very much like, again, alive and like doing stuff. It just seems very meta, you know, book within a book that changes and shifts in a way that I trust Helen Oyoyemi to bring home. So that again is Parasol Against the Axe by Helen Oyoyemi. And that actually came out on the 5th.
Okay. Those are books that we are excited to read. And now I'm going to do a lightning round of paperback releases, possibly even faster than I normally speak, so get ready to slow it down. The first is River Spirit by Layla Abulela, about a young woman and her brother growing up during the Mahdist War in 19th century Sudan. A Country You Can Leave by Asali Angel Ajani. This is a debut about a Black biracial teenage girl and her Russian mother who are struggling to survive in the California desert and survive each other. We Were Once Family, a story of love, death, and child removal in America by Roxana Asgharian. This was one of the best nonfiction books I've read in the last few years. I know I talked about it a few times on the show. This is a look at the 6 Black children who were murdered by their white adoptive parents and the American adoption system that failed them and thousands of other families. The Lost Americans by Christopher Bolin. This is a crime novel about the sister of an employee of an American weapons defense contractor who dies in Egypt. The government says it was suicide. She doesn't believe it and travels to Cairo to get answers. Dirty Laundry by Disha Bose. This was a GMA book club pick. It's a thriller about a mother's group and the murder of one of their members, the member who seemed to have the perfect life. Pineapple Street by Jenny Jackson. Jackson is an editor of many amazing books. This is her debut novel. It was also a GMA book club pick about the lives of 3 sisters from a wealthy Brooklyn family. The Dog of the North by Elizabeth McKenzie. This is one of my favorite novels of last year. It was a zany, funny, smart novel about a woman who decides to walk away in the middle of her life and go and check on her elderly grandparents in California for a change of anything. Walking Practice by Dulkey Min, translated by Victoria Cottle. This is about a shape-shifting alien who is stranded on Earth, so decides to disguise themselves as a human in order to avoid detection and get food, which seems like, you know, good camouflage fit in. But it also turns out that the food that they like to eat the most is other humans. So, humans are delicious. Liliana's Invincible Summer, A Sister's Search for Justice by Cristina Rivera Garza. This is the true story of Cristina Rivera Garza's sister's murder in 1990 at the hands of her abusive ex-boyfriend. Rivera Garza travels back to Mexico City 30 years later to take a look at the case again and learn more about it and how her killer and many of the other killers of women in Mexico have evaded justice. And Muppets in Moscow, the unexpected crazy true story of making Sesame Street in Russia by Natasha Lance Rogoff. This is a very interesting story. I read it a couple of years ago. It came out, I think, like 3 or 4 years ago now. I was like, is just coming out in paperback, but it's really interesting. It's about the introduction of Sesame Street in Russia after the collapse of the Soviet Union. And if you like Sesame Street history, I also recommend Street Gang, The Complete History of Sesame Street by Michael Davis, which is fun as well. And that's it for paperback releases. Vanessa, what are you going to read next?
I am finally going to read The Heaven and Earth Grocery Store by James McBride, which I don't need to tell you all about. You've heard plenty about it, but it's been on my list for a while, and I'm like finally going to get to it. And also a novella I'm excited about that is called A Voice Calling by Christopher Barzak. It's from Psychopomp, which is an indie press that does a lot of like otherworldly, gothy stories. It's like a twist on a haunted house story about a house that has claimed a whole lot of people and a woman who comes in with like a really particular affinity for the house. She can like hear the pleas of its ghosts, and she's gonna solve that mystery or die trying. So I'm excited to read both of those. How about you?
I am going to read, well, first I'm going to finish Victim, and then I'm going to read Someone You Can Build a Nest In by John Wiswell, which I don't actually know anything about. I just know that my friend loved it and said it was giving off Gideon the Ninth vibes, and I was like, Say no more. So that's up next for me. And that is it for us today. Visit bookriot.com/intheclub to sign up for our newsletter. That's bookriot.com/intheclub. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to our awesome audio editor, Caitlin Brame. You can drop us a line at allthebooks@bookriot.com. Vanessa, where can people find you online?
I am mostly on Instagram at buenosdiassd.
All right. And I am mostly on Instagram at franzencomesalive. And if you want to give us a treat, you can go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is you get your podcasts and leave a rating or review. It helps other book lovers to find us, and we appreciate it so much. And as much as we would love to tell you about more books today, we just don't have the time, but you can read about more titles out now in the show notes at bookriot.com/allthebooks, as well as find a link to our weekly new books newsletter. And for more recs or general bookishness, check out bookriot.com. And don't forget to check out our full stable of podcasts at bookriot.com/listen, or just search Book Riot on your podcast player of choice. And in the meantime, happy reading.